Rose McGowan has turned her eye to directing. She premiered her directorial debut, the short film Dawn, at the Sundance Film Festival. It garnered not only critical praise, but a Grand Jury Prize nomination and qualified for the Academy Awards. Rose McGowan is now preparing for her feature-length debut. She's going to be part of a panel at the Woodstock Film Festival, Women in Film and Media. It is entitled Enough Already, Changing the Status of Women in Film and Television. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Rose McGowan to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
It's very nice to have you on the program. When you take part in something like this, what do you think you get out of it? What do you think the audience gets out of it?
That's a really good question. I think it's just an exchange of ideas, and it's, you know, I operate in kind of a vacuum in some ways, so I don't, you know, I don't go to an office where there are other people. I don't have a desk anywhere. I don't, you know, so for me, it's a chance to actually integrate with peers of sorts and also to spread the message. And it's a strong one and an important one.
Ultimately, if you had to fine point it, what is the message for you, your message?
You know, my message, honestly, is broader in some ways, and it applies to Hollywood and it applies kind of to everybody. I kind of think if we were just 10% better as people, including myself, just more awake, more artistic, more giving, more everything, the world would actually change. And I feel like, you know, Hollywood right now, there's a lot of technology storming their gates. And I feel like they're kind of doubling down on this Mad Men era stuff. It's just not cool. And it's somewhat embarrassing, frankly. I mean, if I was them, I'd be embarrassed.
You have in your this quest to direct, was it obviously a conscious choice to say, I don't want to act anymore. I want to do this instead.
Yes, actually it was. And I was really inspired by Hemingway's short story, full story in six words, Baby Shoes for Sale, Never Worn. Dawn wasn't that tonally, but I was wondering, you know, I wanted to challenge myself to do a full feature in under 20 minutes, so I did. It's not quite a normal short film in that it has three strong acts. I also did the set design, which I'm really proud of. It is a conscious decision. It's a very conscious decision to have control of my own destiny as much as one can have.
I want to talk about Dawn in just a moment. You also released a music video this week.
I did.
Did you direct that as well?
I did not. It was directed by a wonderful director named Jonas Åkerlund, who's probably one of the biggest music video directors and has done some real, real provocative art. And together with his wife, Bea Åkerlund, who was the fashion director, and some amazing hair and makeup people. It was like five artists came together and just kind of threw down. You know, there was nobody there telling us what we could or couldn't do. It was ours. It was completely ours. And it's pretty special.
The video is entitled RM486. It helps you, I assume, get your point that we were talking about before, getting that point across.
It is. It's a double, you know, certainly a double use. One, I wanted something that was kind of astral and galactic that matches the song. I mean, it starts with Blade Runner dialogue, after all, and also gives an entree if I'm going to be doing interviews. You know, I've been asked a lot of questions in my life in interviews, and I would like to have also some control over that, of the thought that gets provoked, if you will. And so everything can have a double meaning, I think. I wish, you know, more people would kind of think of it that way when they put things out to the public, because I do think we have a social responsibility.
You want people to think about it what way? That when what you put out also helps the dialogue that we have with you about your work?
No, with women, really. I mean, RU486 is a famously controversial abortion drug.
Right.
And right now Planned Parenthood is being, you know, defunded left, right, and center, and it's just like, come on, not anymore, not on my watch. And it's just so, I'm so tired of these people. And I believe, you know, like Senator Elizabeth Warren said, America is so tired of these people. And they're holding us hostage, and it's time to stop that.
And not to go off on a complete tangent here on politics and especially
regarding,
well, no, I also want to talk about the panel as well. However, I am very curious that how do you feel when you have one of the two women who are running for president of the United States, Carly Fiorina, who is making statements regarding Planned Parenthood and refusing to turn on what she has said about that?
I mean, certainly her right to not turn on what she says about that. I certainly think she's wrong and is doing a huge disservice to her kind. The reason that she's even able to run is because people fought for that right, because women fought for that right. She is where she is on the backs of other women, and that's a disgrace. And I do have strong feelings about this.
Absolutely, because...
And that's truly like, you know, I wonder if Susan B. Anthony would spit at her feet. But probably not, because she was used to being spit on.
When you look at an action like that, and especially now what Planned Parenthood is trying to do of trying to get her to say, okay, this what you're saying is not true, and she has not reversed, how do you think that voters, how do you think that, I don't even care, Republican and Democrat voters should react to that type of tactic?
It's time to rise up. It's time we make our voices heard extra loud right now. We do not legislate men's bodies. You know, Viagra is the fastest drug ever approved, to my knowledge, through the FDA. So do the math. This is disgusting and it's wrong. And it's grandstanding. And I wonder if these people made more money by being on the left, if they'd be there.
When you start out in this video starts out with you almost unrecognizable, and you're peeling away layers of plaster from your body as you emerge in this. Do you feel that that's what's happened to you over the past several years, that there has been this peeling away of the plaster and that you have emerged?
Completely. That's a really astute observation. And one I hadn't really quite thought of, and it's completely parallel. Thank you for saying that. Yes.
Now, with that said, you remain somewhat as a naked, almost alien in it. And do you feel that way? Do you feel as an alien in what is going on in your craft, in your business?
I felt like an alien in the world for a very long time. I came from another country. I came from Italy. I grew up in a commune. So I grew up behind closed walls. And then I came to America, and I have 7 brothers and sisters. So I largely just stayed with them and didn't bother integrating and making friends. And then I became famous. And then you're an oddity. And so it's really only in the last 3 years that I feel like I've integrated with people in the world at all. And in a meaningful way, you know, and partly by design. I spent 7 years dismantling this kind of public persona that didn't really have much to do with me. But imagine every time you're asked a question, it's about something a male director has directed you in. So it's a very limited conversation you're having.
Right.
But also, you know, it was my bread and butter for a long time. I had to, and I really did get infected by the fear that they implant in you in Hollywood. I really, really did. And no more fear. I'm done with that.
When the whole thing happened with when you tweeted about Adam Sandler and the script notes that you had received and telling you what to wear and so forth, you sent out the tweet, and it caused a great stir, and I found it to be interesting in the debate that it caused, but also, I guess what I wondered was, is that the first time that you had ever received something like that, or was that just the straw that broke the camel's back?
Well, that was actually, I mean, it was something that made me laugh because it was so absurd.
Right.
And that was just like a Tuesday afternoon of stupidity in Hollywood. It wasn't even anything overly egregious. It was just, oh, another idiot. Here we go. But, you know, I think he's done some damage to women, and so he can certainly take some heat.
And then when you do that, you know what the consequences are going to be in some way, shape, or form.
Not really, actually. I didn't actually at all. I had no idea.
Because, as you say, it's just another stupid thing in Hollywood.
Basically, it was just another, it was like a Tuesday. It was like, oh, hey, stupid afternoon. Like, hey, stupid thing this afternoon. Yet another one. I mean, if people really knew what goes on behind the scenes, it's criminal. It's dark. It's really dirty and bad. And this is just, this is just a little thing. If people thought that was bad, just wait.
So where was Dawn, were you finished with Dawn when that all happened?
Yes, I was. I'd already gone to Sundance and already done all that, but it wasn't, you know, it didn't have, so it was weird that a script even came to me because I kind of put out that to my agency that I don't want to be acting anymore. And certainly it's helped my resolve. And then I got fired by my agency.
Because you didn't want to do what they wanted you to do.
No, because I spoke up.
Mm. You weren't a good soldier.
I was not a good girl. Because I can guarantee you if a man had done that, he wouldn't get fired. If a male actor had done it. They're pretty much hands-off with male actors.
And the reason that I asked about whether you had finished on or not, because it seems to me that with that done and you realizing what you can do, that it does empower you a little bit to say, okay, I don't have to listen to what you're saying.
Exactly. And it did. And, you know, I was always eye rolling and I have a line inside of my mouth where I would hide behind my long hair and chew on the inside of my mouth when something really disgusting or stupid was happening to keep from blowing up. But I don't have to chew my mouth anymore.
The short, Dawn, is 17 minutes long, and as you say, it comes in these acts, but also it's very startling, what leads up to a startling conclusion. However, you mentioned the design of it, and it is beautiful. It is, which you said you had a great deal to do with. Talk a little bit about why that was important to you in telling the story, which again is a very important story about women, about young women, and what their fate can be and often is.
Right. It is often, you know, when we send girls out into the world with their hands effectively bound and their mouths silenced by wanting them to be the good girl, to be pleasant at all times in society. And when somebody just walks by and a man tells us to smile on the street, why? Am I your puppet? Am I your doll? No. In Dawn, this poor little girl, it shows what can happen to us in society just by, like, thoughtless words. She reads an interview at one point, and it's a real interview. There's an actor named Tab Hunter who's very famous in the early 60s, and, you know, he's in the closet, and he's doing an interview about what he looks for in girls on a date, and that helps lead to her downfall. So it's just an example of just how unwitting society can be when they shape somebody's life and destiny in some ways. And it's also certainly a parallel to my life. I mean, I did the set design very much on purpose. I wanted to show a little class disparity. Her car, her parents' car, is 10 years older than the boy's car. He works at a gas station. He comes and sits on her perfect couch and is uncomfortable and stiff. I try to load a lot of things in there. The two men that she mentions are Rock Hudson and Tab Hunter, both gay closeted male actors who are, you know, this kind of personification of macho at the time and certainly influencing girls as to what a man was. There's a lot of dangers and a lot of traps. There's a lot of bears out there for us, you know.
Did you feel the way that character did at the beginning of the film, where the parents are saying, this is what you should say, this is what you shouldn't say, this is what you do? Sort of it's actually more the mother. The father doesn't even say anything.
Exactly.
Is that how you felt growing
yes.
up?
No, not at all in my family, no. That's how I felt about Hollywood, but I effectively grew up there because I started acting at 17, so I effectively was raised by them.
Of course, you were in Charmed and many other things, and I'm interested in, is there any part of fame that came to you at a young age that you did enjoy?
The travel, certainly. I've had amazing experiences, but I probably would have traveled and had amazing experiences no matter what I did, because that's just kind of what I do. And I certainly have been, I don't want to say afforded, because I've worked very, very hard. Charmed was about 80 to 100 hours a week for 5 years, minus a month and a half in the summer, right, where you spent kind of recovering. It was a really hardcore workload. You know, I've worked very, very hard. Did I enjoy fame? No, I did not. I just didn't personally, because I didn't set out to be an actor. I was discovered. And there was some people are very, very good at being famous. I was pretty good at giving the middle finger, so to speak. But that's how I was raised. I was raised to not be a part of society. You know, my father ran a commune in Italy. Like, we were raised very differently. We were never the normal ones on any block, no matter, you know, there is no normal, but certainly not in my family. It was very colorful, and we were expected to be colorful. And then when you get to Hollywood, they try to mute your tones, and that doesn't work for me. I want to live life in kaleidoscope, you know?
What does that mean for you?
You know, to live life in a really seeing and visual way, to really take part in my existence, and to not be kind of beholden to somebody else's thoughts of what I'm supposed to be, because nobody should be beholden to that. This is it, as far as we know, you know, so do it well.
That line in the video of I'm not a commodity, how did you come to that realization? Was that like an aha moment?
It was, actually. It literally was. I was in my house in L.A. and the power went out, and I started just thinking in the dark, and it was dark for about 10 hours. And I started thinking about my life, and I realized, oh my gosh, I'm an artist, not a commodity. Oh, wait, I can do anything I want. Oh, hey, I got this. And within 2 months, I was directing Dawn.
When you look at the artistic side, does that include everything? Does that include film? Does that include art?
Yes.
Does that include music? That includes everything.
It includes everything. I do a lot of photography. The way I met the band that I did that song with that just came out, I met them because I was shooting them for their album cover. I have actually quite a few careers that people don't know about. I spent years mastering things. You know, Dawn wasn't an accident. I spent over 57,000 hours on set studying. I wasn't just there as a journeyman actor. I was working in all capacities. On days that I wasn't working as an actor, I'd work with, you know, the set decorator. I'd work with the production designers. I'd work with the art department. I'd work with the camera department. I wanted to know my craft, and I realized what I loved about the craft was the totality of it and not the micro of it.
When it comes to the next project, as I mentioned in the introduction, you are now preparing for a feature-length debut. What is going into that preparation, and how is that project coming along?
Well, we're rewriting the second act, and then it'll be ready to get financing. I think we have half the financing already, hopefully, through some people I know. But, you know, the thing that's really interesting is that, honestly, if a man had directed Dawn, because you can direct a 2.5-minute short at Sundance and be directing a Marvel movie after that. It's absurd that there have been no straight offers. It's starting to come in more now, but not through the normal channels in any way. There have been no offers for signing me. I'm a person that was nominated for Grand Jury Prize at Sundance and qualified for the Oscar. And nobody has sought to represent me for being a director. It's insane. It's like mind-boggling what they do. So how is a girl supposed to get ahead? I'm in a unique situation because I have a voice. How is somebody supposed to do it if they don't?
I guess that's what I was wondering as you were describing that, of how many other women there are, and even perhaps who have a similar situation that you have, that are out there struggling with the same thing.
Well, probably a lot, and it's embarrassing. This should embarrass the men in Hollywood because it doesn't make them look good. You know, this kind of male chauvinist, misogynistic attitude that goes on in that town, it doesn't make them look good. I find them to be laughing stocks, actually. You know, the guy driving his yellow Lamborghini down the street with his girl that he bought and paid for to be his accompaniment that day, and he's controlling what goes on the screen? Come on.
So I'm assuming you don't live in Hollywood.
I just moved to New York.
Yeah. So do you feel better there?
I kind of do. The first night I was here, somebody asked me, I was out, and somebody asked me what I was reading. And I couldn't, I looked at them, and they thought I was a weirdo, and I almost started crying because I was so happy that somebody just asked me what I was reading. You know, I mean, that doesn't happen. And I don't want to dog Hollywood because I have some amazing friends there. I know amazingly intelligent people there, just not so much in the industry. And that industry, it's our number one export. We're doing a lot of damage to the world of what we're putting out. And how they treat women behind the scenes equals how they treat women on the screen. And that's reflected in society. Society, it becomes a Norman. Like, there's a lot of inherent damage that we're doing. And I aim to undo some of that. And being on a panel like this is just a little drop in the ocean, but that's what I want. And, you know, the enough is enough line, it is. It is enough. It's tiring. It's boring. It's like, come on already. Get with it. Like, what decade are you people in?
So in undoing this, where does your optimism lie that you can change?
My optimism is that I'm a bull in a china shop and I can push through this. That's my hope. And I hope people join me, men and women.
Well, Rose McGowan is going to be a part of a panel made up of a lot of women who are indeed doing just that, pushing back. It is a panel presented by New York Women in Film and Television. It is entitled Enough Already, Changing the Status of Women in Film and Television, and is part of the Woodstock Film Festival beginning on Wednesday and running throughout the weekend in Woodstock. Rose McGowan, a great pleasure to have you on the program. I thank you for your honesty and for all your great work.
Thank you. Thank you, too.
That's a really great pleasure.
Have a great day.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Again, the name of the panel is Enough Already, Changing the Status of Women in Film and Television. It takes place October 2nd as part of the Woodstock Film Festival. You can find out more information by going to woodstockfilmfestival.com. woodstockfilmfestival.com. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.